Love it, love it, love it. That's Montrose. That's Sammy Hagar's original band. I put that whole album on my MP3 player, but I didn't listen to it yet. God, even my one gig thing is filling up. And you really can't go beyond that. Because how, what, I mean, they're small. You can certainly carry them around. But Jesus. You know, who could, I can barely remember, like, what's on my A thing, you know, that came built in, and what's on my one gig extra thing that I stuck in. So what if you would have to remember, can you buy, is one gig the biggest, I don't even know what you call those. You know, the things you buy that you stick in. Your cameras or your MP3, you know. I've never seen bigger than one gig. It would be nice if you could buy like five. That would probably cost, what, about $300? But those don't cost anything to make. So I think it's time to take that Placebo album off, considering I listened to that whole brand new album once. But I need to listen again because there's a couple of songs I'd keep. Do other people, I guess if you have an iPod, a 5-gig iPod, you know, you never have to take anything off. But I would never have an iPod for so many reasons. All right, so what did I do this weekend? We're having one of these weeks, the whole weekend and this coming week, till like Wednesday. But by Wednesday, we'll have the hurricane. That's not in our weather forecast, but if you look at the thing, we'll probably have the hurricane. Ernesto. You see, they're everywhere. They're fucking taking over this country, these people who won't speak English. Why isn't his name Ernest? Why is his name Ernesto? Check his papers, the hurricane. Does he have a green card? Oh, God, you sound just like Pat Buchanan. If only. I should be half that smart. All right, so, Friday I went uptown. I have to go out of my way to go to a post office. The post office where I live, the two of them, I have two of them, one in, you know, two opposites, are the worst. They're filthy, they're falling apart, and they never have the good commemoratives. And I love having stamps. I don't know why. I mean, it's so stupid, so time worn a cable can, like, have a lovely stamp on their envelope. And Con Edison, oh, you want them to have a nice stamp. But I like getting when the new stamps come out. So I have to go, like, out of my way to, there's this really nice post office. You need a nice one where they sell the commemoratives in a special separate place. So you don't even have to get online. So I got, oh, my God, I got the baseball home run hitters. Mel Ott, Hank Greenberg, Roy Campanella. Did he look that white? He looks white on the stamp. What, they don't want to offend the racists? Make Roy Campanella look white? Mickey Mantle and Hank Greenberg. So we covered everything. You make the black guy look white. You have, like, one Jew, which is pretty much all there ever was in baseball anyway, right? Hank Greenberg. As a hitter, I mean, we know Sandy Koufax wouldn't pitch on Yom Kippur. Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, Mickey Mantle the drunk. So that's a nice set. I like that. And then there's classic American choppers. Bikes. Bikes. Motor scooters, you know, old bikes. Love it. So I went up there, and I got another pair of sneakers because I only have 40 or 50. But oddly enough, you can find yourself without an important color. Now, Garrett would laugh when I'm going to say I don't have brown sneakers because I'm actually wearing brown sneakers. But I am wearing my... These are like falling apart, but it's raining today. I have all these fabulous sneakers, but I have a blue pair and a brown pair. The brown ones in particular, I should throw them out. Because bottoms of them are like disintegrating, but I keep them because you don't want to wear your nice ones when it rains. So they actually had nice brown Reeboks, so I got nice brown Reeboks. And then Saturday I went to the Green Market and I got tomatoes and stuff. And I walked into Barnes & Noble on 6th Avenue and 23rd Street, okay, which is, I don't know, for people not in New York. It's very hip neighborhood, you know. It's where, like, all the gay people moved, you know. All the gay people moved out of the village up to, like, 23rd Street. It's really on 21st Street, but I think of it as being on 23rd Street. And what do I look for first? Where's Pat Buchanan's book? Number one on Amazon for, what, 6 days already? 7 days? Long time. Well, where is it? It's not with the bestsellers, but I guess he probably didn't get to the Times bestseller list. It came out last Tuesday, and the bestseller lists actually come out on Wednesday. We see them on Sunday, but they really come out on Wednesday. So I guess next week or the week after is when he'll hit that. But here it is, this huge, fabulous book, and I'm looking, and I'm looking, and I'm looking, and new nonfiction. You know, they have all the stuff on top of the table piled up. And you look down under the table, and there's a couple of shelves, and there's three copies of his book. Every other book, there's a million gazillion copies. Pat, there's three. So I'm thinking, that's odd. That means one of two things. They're hiding it and they don't even want people to buy it, you know. Or it's so popular that they are sold out and they only have three left. Right? So I say, I'm feeling obnoxious. And I go up to this guy and I didn't even really look. I just was looking for an employee. I only noticed after the guy's wearing a peace button, like the size of a pizza pie, right? And I don't know, what was I wearing? I don't know what I look like. I look like a crazy old lady is what I look like, I guess. You know, I used to sort of, I guess, look like a hippie, but I don't even know what I look like anymore. So I walk up to him, I say, do you have Pat Buchanan's new book? I don't see it over there with the bestsellers. And he looks over at two, you know, compatriots of his who work at Barnes & Noble. Like, oh, my God. I love this. I now have like three or four people at Barnes & Noble who think I'm a right-wing insane person. When we all know I'm a left-wing insane person. So he says, well, it isn't a bestseller. I said, excuse me, it's been number one on Amazon for like 9 days already. Not really, but six, five, whatever. I said nine. And he looks at me and he says, this isn't Amazon. Well, oddly enough, I had just started to look it up when I went home, when I got back on the computer, where I'm happiest. And I had been telling somebody this story. And oddly enough, he apparently was number one on the internet on Barnes & Noble as well. Had I only known that when I was with the Mr. Obnoxious for Peace. So he says, well, they're over. And he starts taking me over to where the books are. And I said, I see those three copies hidden down there. I was looking for the display. Now, they actually, the publishers, you know, you think this is, in my innocence, I know better. They pay to be on those tables. You know, they pay. Everything's money. Nobody says, oh, Pat Buchanan's going to sell a million books. Let's make it really easy to find. You know, the publisher pays Barnes & Noble to... So he looks over at the two other people that worked there, and they all start laughing at me. And I go, Well, I'll be back when it's number one on the Times bestseller list. And you know something else with the bestsellers? They didn't have Ann Coulter's book either. You couldn't find that. Now, that's fine with me. But when they say bookstores hide books, and then the bookstores say, well, we want to sell books. Why would we hide? They're lying. They really are. They are really lying. He wrote a book, not his last book, which was Where the Right Went Wrong. I think Decline of the West. And I had to go. No Barnes & Noble had the book. I had to go, like, to four bookstores to find. They don't like Patrick J. Buchanan. And you really would think. And I really didn't like those people laughing at me with his pizza pie peace button. That's why I hate people on the left. Are they any better than people on the right? No. So that was my day. You know, I really did that to annoy them. Although you really do expect to walk in. I don't know, maybe in Chelsea on 23rd Street, nobody will buy the book. You know, maybe in Nebraska. Maybe in Nebraska, they display it prominently. You know, maybe they just fit, because I've discovered something. Left-wing people can really, you know, get into Patrick J. Buchanan, who I may have here next Tuesday, or maybe not. And don't forget, next Monday, when everybody else is off, I'm here. I'm here. And, you know, the next Monday, the Monday after that, when everybody else is here, I'm off. Whatever everybody else is doing, I'm doing the other thing. All right. So I did that. I wanted to annoy them. But I didn't want to annoy the people at the Gotham Comedy Club. But they apparently wanted to annoy me. Now, I understand that somebody, as I actually thought this, who works here, I guess with the Comedy Channel or maybe with Jim Brewer in this very studio, actually has some big connection to them. It's one of the big comedy clubs in New York. And Marc Maron was playing. Remember Marc Maron from Air America? And then they took his show off Air America, and then they were going to give him another show, and they put, did, I don't know, but he's not on the radio anymore, and he lives in California, but he was in New York this weekend. And I love him because I am a philosopher queen. I am absolutely one of his philosopher queens. And he was playing there. It said in an email I got, but not in any of the ads, not on the website, nowhere. And I figure, all right, I better call this club. Now, I don't think I've ever gone to a comedy club in my life as just a paying customer. I performed in them. I've been comped into them when friends of mine are performing. But number one, I can never make up my mind till the last minute if I even want to go anywhere. So, you know, even, you know, it did vaguely cross my mind that I probably could ask John McDermott, you know, to get me comped in there. Did he know anybody or something? But I didn't, because then I'm like, well, what if I decide I don't want to go? And secondly, somebody like Marc Maron, I can afford to go and pay, and it's better for his career if they see that people want to pay to see him. You know, because then they'll book him again. I know how clubs work because I've worked in clubs. So like 4 o'clock Saturday, I say to myself, you know something, you'll take a nap, you'll get up, you go to the 8 o'clock show. But I'm dubious, you know, because I don't see him on their website or in the ads. All I have is the email he sent, you know, because I'm on his list. So I figure I better call the comedy club. Okay? And you'll find out what happens when I did that. After this break, Lynn Samuels, Sirius Left, 146. Okay, so here I am on Saturday, basically just calling to check to see that Mark Maron actually is playing at the Gotham Comedy Club, right? Called him up, and a living person answers the telephone. That was my first big surprise. Living person answers the telephone. Hello, is Mark Maron playing there tonight? He certainly is. Yes, he is. Oh, great. What time? Well, and then the guy starts telling me this one's playing and that one's playing. And I'm like, what time does is Mark Maron the opening act? Well, we have a full evening of entertainment. We have so-and-so who wrote for Saturday Night Live. You know, please, who didn't write for Sat? And I'm nice. I mean, I stayed nice through this entire conversation. Because I was bemused, basically, as this went on. So I say, I really would like to just know what time Mark Maron is on. Well, we don't know. I can't tell. You know, they don't know. All right. Would you like to make a reservation? And I said, well, I guess so. Because I'm already thinking, okay, so they have three or four comedians. I only want to see one. He's obviously not the headline. So, you know, as soon as I would see him, I would get up and leave. As far as that, you know, as far as I'm concerned. Yes, I would. What's your name? Lynn Samuels. And how many is the reservation for? Just one. What's your... I'd like a phone number, preferably a cell phone. I said, no. I don't give out my phone number. Well, we need a phone number to make a reservation. I said, well, I don't give out my phone number. Well, we need a phone number to make a reservation. Yeah, and they probably need a phone number, you know, because they probably put you on some automatic dial thing and you're going to get ads from this place for the rest of your life. So I say, all right, look, are you sold out? You know, because what if I just came down without making a reservation? Oh, well, you have to have a reservation to get in. And I don't know whether I was laid back Saturday, you know, because it was Saturday, or I was, I don't know what. I just said to him, well, obviously, you just really don't want to do business, do you? Goodbye. And I hung up. But I'm thinking, like, what is their problem? If, like, you were walking by their comedy club and you said, oh, wow, let's go into their comedy club here, would they, like, not let you come in? Oh, I never heard of anything like this. Maybe I don't go out again enough. And you can see why. I mean, here I was, because I really love Mark Maron. I was willing to, number one, leave my house, take a subway into Manhattan for the second time in one day, pay their overinflated admission charge, and buy their overpriced shitty drinks. But no, you have to give a phone number. Does everybody just give out their phone number like that? Are people just so... I have never given out my phone number. Ever. Because the more people have your phone number, the more somebody's likely to call you and want to talk to you. Ooh. So I don't understand. Is this a way to run a business? I don't think so. So I'm sorry. I never got to see Mark Maron, and I really am sorry because I love him, and I'm a philosopher queen. I am. What is wrong with these people? Who is it here who has something to do with that? See, and then I'm thinking, Maybe I should call back and either ask to speak to a manager or just call back and say, hi, I'm calling from, I work at Sirius Satellite Radio. And would you like to redeem yourself? Because am I going to rip your ass? And then I said, no, because, first of all, that famous I'm not. I must say, I have to tell you something. When I gave him my name, let's be honest, I was disappointed that he didn't say, oh, Lynn Samuels. Okay? I thought maybe he'd recognize my name. But that isn't really the point. The point is that that's how they treat, like, regular people? You know, it's like you don't even want special treatment. Who wants special treatment from someplace that treats regular people? Like, give your phone? No, I don't. If Howard Stern called up, would he have to give his phone number? See, that's, I guess, I don't think fast enough. That's when I should have said, I'm in the media. I can't give out my phone number. So what else did I do? I bought a fancy fan at, what do you call it? Home Depot, where now they check your, you know, this annoys the crap out of me. There's this chain in New York called National Wholesale Liquidators. I don't know if they're anywhere else. And when you walk out of one of their stores, you have to show them your receipt. For them to put like an X on it to prove that you didn't steal the merchandise, which I resent no end. But they have, I don't know, it's one of these stores, they sell like everything, you know, like discontinued things, you know, so you get, I don't know, shower curtains and sheets and clothes and hats and anything you can think of. You know, it's like discontinued, it's a discount, it's a crappy discount store. So you figure, all right, they treat everybody like a piece of shit, but you get a good bargain in there once in a while. So I put up with it. But I go into Home Depot does the same thing. You can't leave without some, you know, $6 an hour non-English speaking sack of shit has to make sure you didn't steal something. And the other day, I see in Virgin Records, now, I don't know whether they always did this, if you charge something, they have signs up as though this makes it okay. And I notice Home Depot has these same signs. Although Home Depot doesn't appear to do it. If you use a credit card, you have to present another photo ID along with it. And I resent the crap out of this. Don't treat me like I'm a thief. I'm old enough that, and I worked in retailing, when it was like the customer is always right, and you wanted people's business. You didn't want to antagonize people at every time. Oh, you have to show your receipt. We don't believe it's your credit card. You know, you can't just walk into a fucking nightclub. What is wrong with everybody? What in God's name is wrong with everybody? So I just don't understand anything that is going on in this world anymore. I do understand one thing. This is the best story I have ever posted. I may leave this as my headline forever. Have you ever heard the head of anything? A president, the head of a corporation, except maybe in Japan, you know, where they commit hara-kiri, which I think should be the new trend among this administration. You know something? If they had any honor, you know, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, they'd all just kill themselves. They do that in Japan. They still do that. Somebody fucks up. I'll tell you something. Whoever runs that airport in Kentucky, whatever the hell went on there, now they're saying, oh, they changed the taxiway. That's why the guy didn't know what runway he was on. Jesus. But if people have any honor, you know, just carry yourself. The whole administration. And by the way, all the people, you know, all the Republicans are going, Nancy Pelosi is going to be Speaker of the House. Like, this is the worst thing on earth. Because how could Nancy Pelosi follow a great statesman like Denny Hastert? You know, how could anybody follow in the footsteps of Denny Hastert to be the Speaker of the House? Oh, my God. Jesus. I don't think Nancy Pelosi is going to be the Speaker of the House. I don't think anybody can stand her. And I think they're going to have a revolution against her. Remember when they all got together to get rid of Gingrich? Remember that? They had all these secret meetings and they were going to like overthrow Gingrich as Speaker. They're not going to let that bitch be the Speaker. I can't even stand the sight of her. They're going to pick, like, some better person. I don't know who. But, you know, they're going to have to come up with somebody better than her. So all of this, they're trying to scare all of it. They keep going, Nancy Pelosi is going to be Speaker. Oh, my God. You know, Jesus, what are they? They're planning already. What are they going to name an office building after Denny Hastert? People are so insane. So does anybody say, could Bush come out? Could he go to New Orleans today and say, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. No. You know who did it, though? You know who did it? This is why the people of Lebanon like the Hezbollah. People in Lebanon, now I'm sure he had a political reason for doing this, because the people in southern Lebanon, as they're drifting back home and seeing that they have no home, you know, that the whole southern Lebanon is destroyed and you know, filled with bomblets, people are turning on the Hezbollah, because obviously if they hadn't taken two Israeli soldiers, none of this would have happened. But what would you expect the head of the Hezbollah to say? He was like an American. We had to take them because Israel and pounding on his chest. Do you know what that guy said? He went on, I think it was television or, some interview. And Nasrallah, the head of the Hezbollah, said, holy shit, if I had known they were going to start a war, I never would have taken these two soldiers. I didn't think they were going to start like a war. Did you ever hear anybody say, you have to hand it to him. I mean, even if he's doing it just to re-ingratiate himself with people who now have no homes. Because, like, I wouldn't have done that. If I knew that they were going to, like, bomb my whole country and wreck it and everything, you think I would have done that? Of course not. Isn't there something so refreshing about that? Isn't there something, you know, did you wish that other politicians would just emulate him? Don't you wish Bush could find something to say to those people in New Orleans? Have you seen all the pictures they're showing of what New Orleans looks like now? Do you know they haven't lifted one finger and done anything? There are parts of New Orleans that look exactly the way they looked a year ago. It is criminal. It is at least if you could see they started to do something. Something. And I was in my insomnia last night. I'm lying there saying what they needed was to put somebody in charge who would just, like, cut through the bureaucracy, who would just say, all right, this is it. I'm the boss. This is what you're doing. You were elected. I was appointed. Screw you. Shut your mouth. And just do it. And I wake up this morning, and I don't know what day it was in the paper, you know, because can any of us read Paul Krugman anymore? Of course not. You have to pay the New York Times. And do you know that Paul Krugman said the exact same thing I said? You can tell they don't care. Because if you really want to do, it's like Bush wanted to have a war in Iraq, didn't he? And son of a bitch, we got it. So I'm sure if he was as devoted to New Orleans, to fixing New Orleans, to fixing Mississippi, instead of just handing his fat fuck friend Haley Barbour billions of dollars, which are not being used in Mississippi either to help people, then Bush would have put somebody in charge of the rebuilding of the Gulf. And it would be at least on the way now. You know, if he had put a half the energy into that that he put into this goddamn never-ending war. And Paul Krugman said the exact same thing. I'm a genius. Lynn Samuels, Sirius Left, 146. There's no, oh God. Wait, Mike's been holding on the longest. Mike.
Hi, just quickly.
Yes.
SD cards, which is what this
thank
is called.
You.
Awesome.
Garrett didn't even know.
That's why I'm here. They go up to 8 gigs, but your device will only support up to 1 gig.
Oh, all right. So I am going to have to, like, have a collection of them, and then I'll never know what's on them.
They make lovely storage cases for them.
You know why I don't want more than one? Because they're so little. I'd probably lose them.
That's why you get a nice little case. You keep a little
then
case.
I'd lose the little case. The key word there is not case. The key word is little.
You have a backpack. You put the case in the backpack with the things in it.
Well, yeah, and then you can't find it.
Or you get what I wear, the Scott E. vest, which is the geekiest thing. But it's
oh, God, you have that, like, fisherman vest thing?
Yes.
With 1,000 pockets?
Yes, it's slightly less dorky looking than a fisherman's vest, but yes.
Well, look, let me tell you something. I mentioned this last week, Michael.
Yes.
Vests are back big.
Yeah, I was thinking.
But not with pockets.
No.
I don't know what you're going to do about that. But vests, so maybe even a geeky vest will, maybe the geekiness of the vest will be overcome by the vestiness of the vest.
Well, I'm waiting until I have to go through airport security. I just want to see what the reaction will be.
Do you know that a friend of mine who lives in Florida is running away from the hurricane today? And I said to them, it's a man, and I said, you better look in your bag and make sure, you know, because I assume men just throw crap in there and then you never check it again and you just throw more crap on top. And I said, you better go through your bag and make sure you don't have any, you know, lotion or something or gel in your bag because they'll shoot you or send you to Guantanamo. Do you know what this person said they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I'm taking my computer. That's all I'm taking. And I said, well, what about clothes? He said, I'll buy clothes.
I guess that's the one way to do it.
Well, it is. That's the, you know, basically the simplest way. And since most men, like a woman, can't do that.
Right.
Because.
Oh, but when you came across that $6 an hour sack of shit.
You're, and how many torture wells do you go? I'm like the head of Hezbollah.
I'll tell you that.
You're on, but you're right. But the thing is, like, that's who you get annoyed at. I mean, I do. I get, like, so pissed off when it's like, show me the receipt. And I'm like, I zone out when I'm in stores. And I love, Home Depot scares me. First of all, because they're everybody's got sheetrock, and they're pushing those giant things, and you think, like, I'm going to get killed in the middle of this store.
They ought to conduct a study, maybe when the Democrats are back in power, as to how many little shop owners that these megastores have absolutely bankrupt and put out of business.
Well, you know something? I go out of my way to buy stuff at my local hardware store, but there's, like, when I go to my boulevard,
right,
there happens to be a Home Depot, and do you know why I usually go in there?
Convenient.
Bathroom.
Ah, I love it.
They do. They all have lovely bathrooms, and it's actually a cleaner bathroom than in my supermarket.
Well, from the men's standpoint, the bathrooms are usually pretty disgusting. These contractors come in the morning.
Have to buy something in a hardware store. I go to the little one near me.
Well, Liz,
and the fan that I bought at Home Depot, I only bought because my hardware store never, this whole summer, never had a tower fan.
Oh, my God. Listen, I love you. Keep up the
all
good
right,
fight.
You're right. Okay, bye. He's 100% right. It is not the fault of that little sack of shit making $6. For how many years was I that sack of shit? Making God. When the minimum wage was low. Oh, you'll be happy to know that I think the New York Times had the article that real wages adjusted for inflation this past year for real people went down 2%. And we had an article here. You people who hate where you live, you want to be happy about where you live. We have a little chart in our paper, one of the papers this morning, about healthcare costs in New York City. Did you see that chart? The HMOs, most of them raised their rates by at least 20%. Now, this is, I forget what company is, the most expensive HMO in New York City. Did you see what they charge? It's over $1,000 a month for a single person. And are you ready for what healthcare for a family costs? At the most expensive HMO in New York, $3,375 per month for a family. So that is, what's that? What is that? I can't, 10 times 3,000, 30, it's like $35,000 a year for health care, for an HMO. This is the greatest country in the world. Lynn Samuels, Sirius Left, 146. Dave in Cleveland, why do they check photos?
Okay, the reason is my wife had her identity stolen and I had a credit card stolen. And because we didn't know right away, thousands of dollars were charged to us because nobody checked an ID. They checked the ID not to accuse you of being a thief, but to make sure nobody stole your car.
Yeah, but the stores are not even liable for those kind of charges. The credit card company is.
Well, the credit card company encourages them to check. As to the police departments who come in, my wife works for a retail store in Chicago, and she is given instructions to check IDs at the register because the credit card companies and the police departments ask them to.
Well, all right, that makes sense, but I still resent it.
Well, they're not accusing you. Just know that.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
I don't know. Do I look like an identity thief? Oh, well, I guess you can't sell. Those commercials are back on. Those identity thief commercials where you say, what is it, a bodybuilder now? Or is it the woman speaking like, I don't know. But they're very funny. Hey, Terry.
Hi, darling.
How are you?
Oh, I'm off from work for a week. I just came back from Philadelphia on Saturday.
Oh, what'd you do in Philadelphia?
Oh, the usual stuff. I went to see sites, you know, Independence Hall.
Did you go see that? Did you go to that downstairs Ben Franklin place where you see his toilet? You see like
no,
his septic?
No, I didn't get to go do that this time.
Oh, God, I love that. Ben Franklin's septic tank.
I went to a prison. I went, you know, the Eastern State Penitentiary. With, you know, it's like Alcatraz. You know, they made it into a museum.
Oh, I never went. I only went once to Philadelphia. I should probably go.
But anyway, the reason I called, Home Depot has been doing that for forever. You know, when you as you're walking out the store, the guard or whoever.
Yeah, not in mine.
Not in yours?
No.
No, every Home Depot that I've ever been into, you know, if you bought something, you know, when you after you pay for it and you're walking out the door, you know, they have a guard or employee at the door and they check the receipts.
I don't know. Yesterday, I haven't been in my Home Depot in ages.
Yeah, no, a lot of stores do that. Target does it.
Target does not.
Well, the one in Brooklyn does.
Oh, well, see, the what you see, it is assuming you're a thief. The one in Queens doesn't. Every Best Buy does it, though.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Best Buy does it. Yes.
And Best I Buy's. Don't like that. I don't, but if you stop shopping at every store that did it, you couldn't shop hardly anywhere.
Right. You know, Best Buy, Circuit City, I think, does it, too.
Not the one on 14th Street. You see, it obviously, it really is racist or something.
No, well, I would say very rarely going to that one on 14th Street, but every other one that I've ever been into, they check everybody.
Well, I resent it. You know, I do. If they don't do it at Bergdorf Goodman, or they don't do it at Lord & Taylor, or they don't even do it at Macy's.
Right, no, but...
Would it be something actually worth stealing?
Exactly, but, well, even if you pay, like when I was in Philadelphia, you know, there were a couple of occasions where I paid with a traveler's check, and what they do is, you know, of course you sign in front of them, it's just what you're supposed to do, and they check your ID, you know, driver's license, and they write down, you know, their license information, the 9-digit number, and the expiration date, and whatever else they have to write down.
Well, if you look at LynnSamuels.com, you will see my story about biometrics. Mm. This is a huge business now. They are gonna, you're gonna need cards now with your fingerprints, your eye scans. You're not gonna be able to do anything.
Well, that I'll resent. That I do resent. I mean.
Well, read the article. It's very interesting. Because, and you know one reason they want it?
Mm-hmm.
One reason they want it is because the companies who sell this shit are gonna make a fortune.
And it's the same thing with, you know, you go into a store, you were talking about it earlier, and they ask for your phone number.
Oh, yeah, I don't give anybody my...
Oh, no, unless it's somebody I've already been doing business with, and family members. Other than that, no, I don't give my...
And when I pay cash and they want your zip code, I won't even give them my zip code when they don't know who I am. Thank you, the hour is up, I'll be right back. Maybe we'll talk about something meaningful. Probably not. Oh, God. Get the studio, but we don't have it. We have, like, weird gaps here. We have so much. Either that or I have weird taste. I think that's more like it. This is such an amazing article in Newsweek. I'm going to have to post this when I go home. Steve Wynn and all the casinos, the Vegas casinos, guess where they're all opening up any minute? China. You know something? We ought to boycott all these motherfuckers that are so interested. You see, this is my new theory. I am dying to ask Pat Buchanan if I'm correct. Businesses, this started in the 70s with businesses, with this globalization. Businesses starting in the 1970s are not American. Don't care. Screw us. Any business. They just don't care. That regime in China should not be encouraged. Now, I know their theory is, oh, but we bring capitalism and they'll open up. And in the meantime, they're locking people up. They're killing them. It's a crock of crap. You know, that they're any less repressive. They're really not. But everybody wants to do business because how many Chinese are there? More than 3 billion of them. Right? So the loyalty of any business is to money. I would just say I'd never stay at another Steve Wynn hotel again as long as I lived. The article is mostly studying Chinese. He himself. I would just say if I ever had been to Vegas and I could have afforded $370 a night minimum, I'd never stay in his hotels again. You want to do business in China? Fine, but not my business. But you'd have nowhere to stay in Las Vegas, apparently, since they're all opening casinos in China. Right? So, I really wish China would turn against us. Wouldn't that be fabulous? Like, if they just wake up one day and say, we've had enough of this. We've had enough of this. Because gambling is like debauchery, isn't it? What if they just woke up and said, well, these casinos haven't all opened, but let them all open and let all the American companies be there. And then some real communist, right, will rule China again. He'll wake up, he'll say, that's it, I'm nationalizing everything in the whole country. And plenty of communist countries have done that. They say, that's it. And they just take everything. They just say, that's it. Steve Wynn, it's not your casino anymore. It is the government of China's casino. I hope that happens. That'll teach them, won't it? Should have stayed in your own democratic country. But my theory is that what has happened now as this globalization has progressed is that the politicians are now like that too. The politicians don't care about this country. The politicians don't care about the people of this country. Nothing is any longer done for the people of this country. We are meaningless to the businesses and the government of our very own country. What do they care? Everything, this government does everything for the businesses, and the businesses don't care about this country. So it just is this big circle of we are meaningless to them. We are just meaningless. So they're opening all these casinos on the southern Chinese peninsula of Macau. Steve Wynn is leading the pack. Las Vegas gaming companies plan to invest about $20 billion by 2010. Why doesn't somebody rebuild New Orleans, Bay St. Louis? No. And the weird thing is, guess what they have in Mississippi? Casinos. This spring, the Las Vegas Sands Corporation will open the $2.3 billion Venetian Macau with a facade. This is an amazing story. With a facade three times the size of the Las Vegas version. To complement the Sands Macau, a casino-only property that opened in 2004. By 2007, Wynn's Resort, the $1.2 billion Wynn's Macau, is that how you pronounce it, M-A-C-A-U, will be neighbors with the $1.1 billion MGM Grand Macau. Isn't all this gambling, like, against communism? Jesus. Now get this, listen to this. The customer base in the peninsula of Macau, the Chinese peninsula of Macau, is staggering. Las Vegas, Nevada is within, this is why nobody cares about us anymore. Las Vegas, Nevada is within a 5-hour flight for 450 million people. All right, that's the whole United States is 300 million. Where's the other 150 million people, please? Las Vegas. Oh, Mexico? Canada? I don't know. Whatever. This is what Newsweek says. Las Vegas is within a 5-hour flight for 450 million people. Okay? Macau, a former Portuguese colony, returned to China in 1999, that was like yesterday, is within a 5-hour flight for, guess how many people? 3 billion people. There you go. There you go. It's too late. Somebody asked, I heard Pat on the Pat Buchanan on the radio. Somebody asked him, like, have we reached the tipping point? There's a tipping point. There's a point where, you know, like, I'll walk into a store. I'm like two avenues that I can go to, you know, shopping areas. And one of them is right near my house. And that's, you know, semi-okay. And the other one where my old Navy is, where the Home Depot is, where the best pancakes in my neighborhood are. You ever see, like, a little old-fashioned diner? There's people lined up outside in the pouring rain to get into this little, oh, God, so hot, so small, but what pancakes? I would not wait online. I just slip in, sit at the counter, which I hate. But that's the only way to get it, the New York Ham and Eggery. But you go to that avenue where there's an old Navy, there's a Stop and Shop, the Home Depot, you know, a Conway's, you know, the cheap clothing store. And in the 6 years I've lived there, I won't go there anymore. I used to go there, like, all the time. It's a longer walk, you know, but it's a better supermarket, or it used to be. And I practically never go there anymore because it used to be, oh, how diverse. I mean, a lot of diversity. It's not diversity anymore. It is like I walk into a foreign country. It is, I'm sorry, I don't care, you know, I'm not apologizing for this. I apologize for the $6 sack of shit. But it is all Spanish-speaking. It is just all Spanish-speaking people. And we are rapidly coming to the point where the few of us left who can speak English, they're not even going to have English-speaking cashiers at these stores anymore. I'm amazed they still do. Because if 90% of your customer base is Spanish-speaking and can't speak English and has no desire to speak English, then why should they cater to the few of us left on this earth in that neighborhood? It is literally like being in a foreign country. It's like I won't go there. I mean, this is my neighborhood where I live, and there's a part of it where I just barely will go anymore because I feel like I don't belong there. Now, how disgusting is that? And you just want to go, you fucking illegal scumbags. And you know they're not legal. You know none of them are legal. They all have 5,000 anchor babies. Horrible. Just, it's horrible. It really is. You want to come here? Speak English! Oh, so did anybody watch the Emmys last night? I must be the only person. It was so good. It really went, you know, I love how people, you know, have the cliche. And the cliche is, oh, the Emmys stunk. All the Oscars stunk. Oh, you're supposed to say they stink. You know, so because nobody has a mind, you know, nobody can think for himself. Everybody goes, oh, it stank. You can tell the people that really can think. I think David B. and Cooley it is. It was fine. Conan O'Brien was wonderful. He had fabulous writers. He really had good writers. And I know all the, oh, God, you know something? If people could concentrate on anything that was important, if people had any sense of priorities, it would just be so astonishing to me. Because people are such morons. They're all in an uproar because of the beginning of the show. There was that plane crash yesterday in which 49 people died. First of all, there's probably 49 people shot on the streets of America every day. How many people got shot to death in the Bronx over the weekend? Like three people got shot to death. And then in New York, we had this insane man. They're going to say he was insane. He was also drunk and on coke. But I guess because he was insane, he's not responding. I would take that piece of shit. I would take that guy. And I don't know, couldn't they, like, walk him out behind the police station and trip on their gun and accidentally just kill him? There are just some crimes that I think are so heinous that bothering with the niceties of the law, you know, is a waste of everybody's time. This guy's mentally ill, but he was also drunk and coked up. Drove around in a green car, in his green car, shooting at people in red cars. And he managed to kill a 51-year-old man. You know, the minute somebody's dead, they become wonderful. But this guy sound... Guy's married 26 years. He has three, you know, grown children, you know, a college age children. They had just dropped one of their daughters off at college. And this maniac, coked up drunk, kills the guy. Because he's like, oh, he thinks the Bloods are after him. So he's, talk about acid, you ever see two people walking around and look like acid burnouts? There's two. You know how you can tell those old guys that took way too many drugs in the 60s? There they go. I don't know who they were. And he just killed this guy. Why should anybody go through the niceties of a trial? Why? The guy is a drug dealer. This guy should have been locked up anyway. He had beaten the crap out of his girlfriend on the 20th of August. He has other he's violent. And the judge gave the girlfriend an order of protection, but let the guy out on his own recognizance. I'm telling you, couldn't they say, oh, we took him outside to exercise behind the prison in the yard, and we tripped and our gun went off, and oh, Jesus, he's dead now. I would do that. He deserves it. Why go through a trial? Why waste money? Why spend any time on him? Kill him! So 49 people died in the plane crash, which is a tragedy, you know, because it's, oh, God, the newlyweds, and the guy was running home early at 6 a.m. so he could be with his family on Sunday. I mean, you know, these hot, and you know how they died, don't you, in that plane crash? You know, they never want to tell us the reality of anything. Everything is because we're children, because you don't want to, do you know how those people died? They burned up. They didn't die in the plane crash. You wonder how many of them would have walked away from the plane crash itself. But the plane caught fire, and they said to people, oh, you better bring some DNA, because these are just, you know, people tenders here. These are just burned up crisps. So the Emmy started with this skit where Conan O'Brien is on an airplane, and he says, oh, I'm going to go do the Emmys, and what could go wrong? And the plane crashes. Well, yeah, which is apparently, I guess, judging from how it went on, the premise of the TV show Lost. I mean, I never thought about it. I don't watch Lost, but how did they get on the island? I guess in a plane crash. Well, the right-wing people start up. Because the right-wing people, they don't fucking care about Iraq. But boy, do they care that NBC mocked a plane crash. But they didn't. And apparently the somebody in Kentucky, you know, I don't know, the head of the local NBC station got pretty upset, which I get, that I could see. But God, get a grip. Oh, we don't care about the war in Iraq. Only 9 soldiers got killed over the weekend and 110 Iraqis. You know, that doesn't bother anybody. Conan O'Brien! The opening bit of the Emmys. That bothers them. You know, oh, Jesus, we can't rebuild New Orleans. Oh, yeah, but Conan O'Brien made for, and you know the nastiest thing anybody said? Well, why don't they call Dick Ebersole and see what he thinks about a comedy routine about a plane crash? You know something? I bet Dick Ebersole would have understood it. I bet Dick Ebersole, not being, you know, like some right-wing moron, you know, would say, what does the opening of the Emmys have to do with my son being killed in a plane crash? I bet he would understand. So that was what they got all excited. But I enjoyed the Emmys. I'll tell you more about it when we come back. And I'm going to play you the absolutely best 2 minutes and 12 seconds of the entire... Well, maybe... Yeah, I guess the best. I was thinking of Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who I don't even like. But she was fabulous. How did she win, though? So let me tell you the best joke. Well, actor, the best joke. Bob Newhart was there. You know, Conan O'Brien did this really bad. And I don't even like Conan O'Brien particularly. But he did this thing where he was going to lock up Bob Newhart in a airtight booth that only had 3 hours of air. So that if the show ran over, Bob Newhart was going to die. And, you know, the great thing about Bob Newhart doesn't even have to say anything, and he's so funny. And he was. I mean, he just gives a look. He just does something. So here was Conan's best joke. All these Hollywood stars, you know, are doing television shows this year. It's not going to be funny when I tell it. I'm warning you because it never is. All these Hollywood stars are doing... are going to be on TV this year. Alec Baldwin is going to be on NBC in 60 Rock. And James Woods is going to be on CBS in The Shark. And Mel Gibson has joined Al Jazeera. That's funny. And it's not like you think, I don't think Conan's funny. I just sit there and go, oh, what great writers. You know, like, you never get the impression Conan O'Brien ever wrote anything funny he's ever said. I don't. He's the only, but everybody else, I believe Jay Leno makes up everything. You know, but Conan O'Brien, you just, oh, what great writers. All right, there are all these people calling. So, oh my God, Chris in Texas, you hung on so long.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about that ID and then like credit cards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, they're actually doing the opposite than what helps you, because every time you show your ID, you're actually contributing to the identity theft. Say you use your card 1,500 times a year. That means 1,500 times a year you've shown it to Joe whoever, showing your birthday, your home address, other pertinent information, and that's how identity thieves get at you.
Yeah, so that's actually true. Now, there are some I had for a while. Some credit cards put your picture on the credit card.
See, like, that wouldn't be, that's not so bad. You know, unless you're a person that has a beard and then you shave, then or vice versa.
Oh, the whole thing is that, believe me, they are, read the story I have posted, they're going to put chips in these cards with your, they're going to have more information about you. They're going to be able to steal your identity, your medical records, you know, oh, they'll be able to steal everything.
I believe you.
It's disgusting, but somebody will make a lot of money. You hung on for so long that, of course, your phone started sounding like crap. Dan in Louisville.
Is my phone sounding like crap?
Not yet.
I hung on forever, too.
I know you did. I'm sorry.
Listen, excuse me. I'm down in Louisville. I had to wake up this morning. Now, I enjoyed the Emmys. I enjoyed the opening sequence. I never... did I connect that opening sequence with the tragedy?
Because it has to do with Lost. Right? It has to do with the premise of a show, not a plane crash.
That's what I thought. I never even thought about it. And then this morning I have to wake up and hear the local newscasters screaming and yelling, even the Today program, saying how insensitive it was of Conan O'Brien. He didn't write the crap anyway. Plus the fact that he probably filmed it 3 weeks ago. What, are they supposed to cut it?
That isn't even the point. The point is get the fuck over being so sensitive. Get over it.
And plus, if, you know, you're going to be so sensitive about people that you've lost.
Then why were you watching the Emmys?
Exactly.
That was my feeling. Like, if I had somebody who got burned up in a plane crash, I don't think I'd be saying, oh, Jesus, Joe's dead, but I want to watch the Emmys.
No. And my wife died 4 years ago, leaving me with two kids. Now, I watched TV. I still had a sense of humor. And if somebody made a joke that I didn't know, you know, I don't know them about, you know, cancer, death, I would have giggled. It would have been fine. But I'm just guessing that anybody who had lost somebody in that plane crash 2 days earlier was not sitting watching.
It wasn't 2 days. It was like that morning. It was at 6 o'clock that morning. What gets me is somehow it's the right-wing people who think the media is so left-wing that got all upset about this. The people who don't care about Iraq, they don't care about New Orleans, they care about a skit on a show.
The media is no longer left-wing anyway.
Well, I don't think the media ever was left-wing.
I agree.
You know, because if the media was left-wing, maybe in 2002, somebody would have said, excuse me, I'm sitting here on NBC, and could I just ask, like, why do we have to go to war with Iraq? Nobody ever said that on the liberal media.
Of course not. Now, I'm middle of the road, and I've always thought the media was middle of the road, but the right-wing has swung so far to the right that I look like I'm severely left-wing.
I know. They really have pushed it so far over. How old are your kids now?
My kids are now 12 and 7. They were 8 and 3.
Are they boys or girls?
I have the younger one is a boy and the older is a girl.
Oh.
And they're doing extremely well.
Wow, so you had to do all of that. I've read these stories about single fathers, you know, who have to learn how to braid hair and, you know, all that stuff that guys never learn how to do.
Well, I was always really involved anyway, and not that, you know, I don't miss the input of my wife, but I'm okay. I've got two kids who are in honors programs at their schools, and we're real tight.
Well, I'll tell you something. You sound like a normal, rational human being.
Don't call me normal.
Oh,
get out of here.
Okay. So that's probably why. Thanks, honey.
I love you.
Bye. See, I don't know why that I read all these women's magazines, and you wouldn't think so, but I do. But it was nice. It rained this weekend. I pulled the TV out and washed the floor behind the TV. That's like a big occasion in my life. How often do people do that? Garrett says never. But then you do it Oh, my God, it's so disgusting. But whenever you read these articles about single fathers, they always make, like, that big deal about that the hardest thing is to learn, you know, because a little girl, you have to fix her hair for her. You know, and the fathers have to learn how to make braids and stuff. Oh, God, you should see the commotion around here. Janet Jackson is either here or she's going to be here. Here's the sense of priorities. Everybody's like all in a tizzy. In the meantime, you know who is here somewhere or other? Not that I'd recognize him if I saw him. Aaron Neville. Really, you know, you may not want to look at his stomach. Although I would think you could find his stomach easier than her stomach. Because I think it probably protrudes more. But, Jesus, Aaron Neville. Lynn Samuels, Sirius Left, 146. You know why people got so upset seeing Dick Clark? I know why. You know, people are saying, oh, why would he want people to see him like this? And, you know, and as somebody said, it is sort of true. This poor Dick Clark. First of all, there's Simon with the open shirt with the chest hair. is with that, Simon Cowell? You know, please. And you could see, I'll tell you something that was touching, is Simon Cowell really reveres Dick Clark. That really came across. It would have come across better if you didn't have to see his chest hair. But you know what it is about, and then Barry Manilow comes out, and he's singing and dancing after he's already announced that he's in the hospital this morning getting this hip surgery, not replacements. He's just getting arthroscopic, whatever that is. So it's like, oh, my God, merciful heaven. And this friend of mine, who's much younger than I am, says, it's supposed to be about entertainment. This is not entertaining. And I said, you don't understand why it's not entertaining. It's not because you care about Dick Clark. You don't give a fuck about Dick Clark. It's because that's you. Because everybody's watching it. You can be 28, you can be 40, you can be 64. You're like, oh, my God, am I going to end up like Dick Clark? Oh, my God, is that going to be me? Oh, Jesus. That's why people don't like to see that. If you really thought about it, you say, isn't that nice? The guy had a stroke. He can speak again. He's much more easy to understand than he was on New Year's Eve. You can see that, and it would be sort of one of those uplifting things. But it's not uplifting because it scares the shit out of everybody. Oh, my God, that's going to be me. How old is he, Mabel? I'll tell you, look fabulous for her age. Who, when you look up her biography, she has apparently taken out date of birth. Cloris Leachman. Cloris Leachman was like, well, isn't she into all health food and shit like that? But she was Miss Chicago or Miss Illinois or something in 1946. So you figure this chick was born somewhere in the late 1920s, which means she's really close to 80 years old. And you got to hand it to her. She looked, you know, for like 80 years old. Holy crap. She looked better than Joan Rivers. How does Joan Rivers walk out of the house? What is wrong with... She can't... Do you know that she speaks worse than Dick Clark? There is something wrong with Joan Rivers' speech, and you know why. Because if you pull all your skin this far back, you can't talk anymore. That's why. But I'm telling you, that's why Dick Clark upset people. Because you just see yourself in his deteriorated thing. When you really ought to say good. And he said he's learning how to walk again. And people are like, oh, my God. You know, if you're 28, you don't think it's ever going to be you. If you're 40, you may have an inkling. If you're my age, you're wondering if it's next week. There you go. Eddie in Connecticut.
Hey. It's me, your old pal, the fuck you guy.
Oh, if I had realized that, I probably never would have clicked you on. I heard that there may have been a nipple at the Emmys, but I didn't see it. I didn't get to see the whole thing.
It was Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
When
she jumped up on stage to get her award, her boobs were popping out all over.
I didn't notice her boobs. I saw that part. I did hear that people were saying somebody's nipples showed.
Hey.
The only nipple I heard about was apparently Helen Mirren, who I did miss.
Oh, no.
Said, the thing I'm happy about is I didn't fall tit over ass over tit on my way up here. So they let us say tit? You're not allowed to say tit.
I didn't hear that part.
No.
The 116-year-old woman died today, the oldest woman.
Yeah, but now there's another one. There's always another oldest woman.
Oh, God. Is your pussy smell that bad?
Hey, fuck
Wait,
you.
No.
Oh, my God. All right. What a genius. Tracy in D.C. Oh, wait a minute. Tracy in D.C.
Hey, and you, how you doing, Lynn?
Okay.
And you know, the thing is that Dick Clark went for so long looking so good, you know?
He doesn't look that bad. I'll tell you something, except for the stroke thing. Yeah. He doesn't look that bad.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he's had some, but it just, people don't understand why they don't like it. Because you're just scared that it's going to be you.
That's true. The reason I called, I think you said this last week, and I didn't get a chance to call in, but I wanted to call in because I had to correct you because I love you and I just don't want you putting out falsehoods. When you said, like, black people can't swim.
But that doesn't mean all black people.
No, but a lot of us do. I tell you, I've been swimming since I was 5 years old.
Yeah, but there never have been in professional swimming.
Yeah, that's because we.
Do you ever see black people? I never see black people.
You know what? Ironically, yesterday there was a swimming competition on, I think, and there was this black guy that was a member of the team. I think it's. I wouldn't be surprised. Don't be surprised if in the next Olympics you don't see some black swimmers.
No, you see some, but it's like, look, you think of basketball, you know.
Right, but that's just
so because it's not like, I don't, it's like not prejudiced. It's not insult to say, you know, swimming doesn't seem to be like a black thing.
But that's what trust me, I promise you, many of us swim.
I'm sure that doesn't mean that no black person can swim.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, just like we, supposedly don't do winter sports, and now, you know, we're all over the place.
I mean, it's like it's like what I was kidding about, this thing about the Jewish baseball players.
Oh, right.
There aren't. I mean, of course, there's Sandy Koufax and, you know, Hank Greenberg and a couple of other. But basically, there are practically no Jewish baseball players.
Yeah.
So who knows why?
You know what? I think it's sociological. I think the reason you don't see a lot of, like, black swimmers, like, in competition is because, you know, the emphasis isn't on that. You know, there's no channeling to that. But in general, a lot of us do swim, and I just wanted to let you guys know that. Some people, like, actually think black people can't swim.
Oh, well, that's just stupid. Why would that be? Like, the brown, the melanin, like, makes you sink or something?
You would be surprised when, like, they put out some shit about, like, buoyancy. Like, that has nothing to do with it.
Oh, all right. Well, look, the one time I went to a summer camp, I was a counselor, and I was 21, and it was in Pennsylvania, and there was a girl who had grown up right around where the camp was, and she actually believed Jews had horns. And that whole thing came because that statue of David, you know, which actually I think it once had a halo, and the halo got broken off, so the statue ended up looking like he had horns. I actually met, like, a person who really believed that.
Yeah, it's funny. I find that hilarious.
Well, good. If we ever go swimming, I'll stick out my horns and, you know, you above water, Tracy. That's it. All the blacks should swim with the Jews and go on the horns. I want to play this, that John Stewart thing. Greg in California.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
I just want to say, I got a little song for you.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yeah.
Okay. You put the Jews in the oven and you cook them all night. You put the Jews in the oven and you cook them all right. You put the Jews in the oven and you cook them all night. All right.
Okay. Howard's off this week, isn't he? He has to be. Or they already heard Howard. Now they're listening to me. Lynn Samuels, Sirius Left 146. No, you shouldn't even be playing that now. All right, I want to play you this Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert thing last night from the Emmys. From the Emmys. This is the best thing on the whole Emmys. It's the best thing on the whole Emmys. We're running out of time. There we go.
Thank you. It's Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here tonight.
What is that?
Good evening, godless sodomites.
What are you doing?
I'm bringing the truth, John. We're in Hollywood, the belly of the beast.
You can't just read the prompter?
I'm reading the prompter in here. You can read that pablum.
Award show banter is not pablum. Reality television celebrates the human condition. Illuminating what's extraordinary in the ordinary person.
It warps the minds of our children and weakens the resolve of our allies.
The results are often dramatic and always unexpected. We're here to honor achievement in that category.
By giving you a golden idol to worship. Kneel before your God, Babylon!
This is about the Manilow thing.
I lost to Barry Manilow! Cabana. Singing and dancing is not performing. Wolverine, I could have lost to. He's got claws for hands.
All right.
Can I hold one of yours?
No. The nominees are.
That was just so fabulous. They are just the best. The best. I had to play that because I'll tell you something. By tomorrow, it'll be boring. Who wanted to, what happened to the Helen Mirren person? Oh, well, Mike in Mississippi.
Hey, Lynn, how you doing?
Okay, what's up?
Hey, look, I'm going to ask a question because I'm sensing something that I don't want to think it's just me, exactly what I'm hearing. Look, as I listen to right-wing expressions and rhetoric, you know, I really get the sense that their rhetoric and mindset and worldviews is as fanatical as those jihadist extremists in the Middle East. You know, it's a thing, and I can hear it and express it. I drive a truck, and I can hear it over the CB radio. You know, I'm not a racist, but
The minute somebody says I'm not a racist. I figure they are.
Well, I mean, I like all people. I've had a chance to travel the world and enjoy all cultures. And I talk to people all the time. I talk to all kind of people, and I want to know things about them and what they do and where they come from. And that's why I think I qualify to say that.
Okay.
I actually know what the word means, you know. But anyway, you know, I have a problem when... I'm listening to the CB radio, and the first thing comes out of right field is, "Hey, nigga, you know, shut up, nigga, shut up." You know, you don't hear Mexicans or black people; they're as unlikely to call another driver of another race out of their name to tell them to shut up or you're stupid or something as quick as a white person would that tried these.
Wow. Stuff.
You know, and it's just like that, you know, and that's a reality. And some people probably won't say it, but I'm going to call it just what it is, you know. And I hear that kind of extremism when I listen to conservative talk radio, you know, even on terrestrial radio. I hear the same dogma, you know.
Oh, and it's worse on terrestrial radio. The stuff that Neil Bortz, you know, like calls Muhammad a rag picker, I have never heard the kind of stuff I'm hearing on the radio lately.
Well,
I think it comes from the top. You know something? I think the people running this country are a bunch of racists and fanatics and maniacs. And it just trickle. That's the only trickle down we get anymore.
Well, caller before me, I mean, was a perfect example about the Jews.
Oh, that was, I think that was just one of Howard's fans who thought he was being funny.
So what now?
That's like different. Don't that, that's just like stupid people who think they're funny.
But there are a lot of same people who are in that dogma and who's a part of that party. To me, I see.
Well, that's not serious. Yeah, I have to say goodbye because the whole show is over. And somebody wanted to talk about Helen Mirren. And will somebody tell me, did they mention Ann Coulter at the Emmys or show her picture or Sean or Rush? Somebody kept saying to me, they mentioned Ann Coulter 3 times. You know, and I'm saying, like, I don't know. I'm watching and not watching and listening and not listening. But if you want that Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert thing, it's at crooksandlawyers.com. And I, being neither one, hopefully, will be back tomorrow at Sirius Left 146. Thank you, Garrett. Goodbye.